This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, a Milwaukee emergency preparedness official tells us about heat wave preparations and how to protect yourself in dangerously hot conditions like the ones facing much of the southern United States right now. Now it's prime picnic and barbecue season here in Wisconsin. Time to bring out our favorite summer recipes to share. But cooking for a large group can be tricky, especially in the summer heat. And when somebody says they're bringing a salad to the party, well, here in Wisconsin, that can mean anything from fruits and vegetables to potatoes and pasta. Today on Food Friday, our guest shares the secret to make-ahead potluck recipes that are crowd-pleasing and easy to pull off. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What are your favorite foods to bring to a potluck? What are your favorite foods for somebody else to bring to a potluck? What is your go-to recipe when you need that dish to pass? What do you think about buying stuff at a store to bring to the potluck? Hot or not? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Allie Rosen hosts a New York cooking show called Potluck. She's the author of three cookbooks, including Bring It, Tried and True Recipes for Potlucks and Casual Entertaining. Allie, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks so much for having me again.
Before we get to recipes, let's talk about the planning stages here, because I think we've all been in that situation where everybody brings the dessert, or the person brought the vegetable went with potato, or the person brought the salad went with potato salad, and so on. How do we make sure we divvy up the labor so we end up with some kind of culinary variety there?
Well, I think a lot of people feel awkward telling people to do something specifically when actually most people desperately want to bring the right thing. You know, it's like we as the host want to be like, oh, I don't want to bother you. But in some ways, it's more of a bother to not be specific. So if you're having a party, it's okay to say to someone like, hey, would you bring a dessert? Hey, would you bring a salad? Nobody minds that. And guess what? Like everyone's an adult. They can say no. They can be like, actually, I was really thinking of bringing some, you know, margaritas. Then you can say great, or, oh, we already have 12 people who already are on top of that. So, you know, I think it's okay to like assume the best of everyone coming and just make sure that all your bases are covered.
Every once in a while, Allie, I've run across the potluck curmudgeon who says, hey, if you're going to invite people over, you provide the food, don't share the work. Obviously, you don't agree with that. You've devoted much of your life to encouraging people to do these kind of things. What's the fun? What's the social advantage of, hey, we're all chipping in to do the food here?
I just think that people enjoy being a part of something. And also everybody likes to know they're going to have at least one thing that they enjoy at a party, right? And I also think it's not a requirement that somebody cooks. It's not a requirement that somebody spends a lot of money. Like it's okay to show up to a potluck with a bottle of wine. It's okay to go to your local Trader Joe's and buy two-buck chuck and bring it to the potluck and say, this is all I could afford. This is all I had time for. Whatever. It's the idea of contributing something, of being part of a larger whole. So I think there's this idea of potlucks as like taking up everybody's time or being really expensive for everybody. Like you're being invited. Why should I have to bring something? And I think of it more as just like collective entertainment, something for people to talk about, something for people to be proud of. You know, it doesn't have to be that complicated. Now, if you are like me and you enjoy cooking and bringing things, then yeah, by all means, cook, spend time on it, bring something. But I don't think a potluck inherently means that you have to spend a lot of time on it.
Now, if I'm, you know, the invitee, I'm going to the party, the potluck, the picnic, whatever, and I'm trying to plan, how much do I need to think about, you know, what resources are available there? Like, I probably won't bring the big vat of soup to the picnic. Do I need to know if there's oven space available for the indoor potluck? What kind of logistical checking should we do in advance?
Well, I think the first thing is, if you can bring something that needs no logistics, I recommend that, right? Like, start out with being like, if someone asks me to bring a protein, like, bring something like, you know, I have in my book, Bring It, a mustard salmon, right? Which can be served at room temperature. Like, if you can in any way avoid needing an oven, needing to use someone's cutting board, try to do that. If you can't, again, just ask, you know, but also keep in mind that if someone is hosting, they are going to be busy. So just try to make sure that you're bringing something that doesn't require a lot of them.
Talking to Allie Rosen, author of cookbooks, including Bring It, Tried and True Recipes for Potlucks and Casual Entertaining. We are talking about bringing a dish to pass on this edition of Food Friday. love to hear yours. What do you like to bring when somebody says, hey, bring something to the thing? Join in at 800-642-1234. Or when you plan some kind of potluck, how do you divvy up the work? Has it ever gone horribly, horribly wrong? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Allie, I overheard in the studio our technical director talking to you. You are a big fan, and this is just about a good season for this in Wisconsin, weather permitting, for corn and grilled corn. Can you talk about great use to use corn in our dishes to pass?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the best ingredients in the summer, I mean, and the reason why people love doing things in the summer is that the ingredients are so excellent, you don't have to do a lot to them, right? Like, I think in the winter, it's like you're not getting a lot of fresh stuff. So, okay, that's the time to, you know, braise something for 8 hours. But corn in the summer, like, you could literally just shuck the corn and hand it to people and they probably would be thrilled. But I also think that corn is something that's super versatile because it doesn't get wet or messy, right? Like, it's not like a tomato, which is delicious, but can create a mess. It's something that you can serve in a million different forms. It adds a lot of heft to anything that you're making, you know? So if you have a salad and you want it to be more like a side, throw a little bit of corn on it. You know, if you have something that you need to like have a little bit more flavor, but not be overpowered, throw some corn on it. And it's also just great on a grill, like throw corn on a grill and hand it out to people. So to me, there's like very few items that are as easy and beloved as corn.
Let's look at a couple standbys, things that we might think, you know, oh yeah, that's going to show up at the potluck or the picnic or the cookout. Potato salad. I like potato salad. Sometimes it has a reputation of being boring. I've eaten and I've made ones that are pretty boring. Do you have some advice on how to make an interesting potato salad?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the first thing is to make sure you have some acid in there, right? Like, yes, we like the mayo, it gives it that consistency, but you need something that makes it pop. So for a lot of people, that's just as simple as putting some lemon on it. But also think outside the box. Like, I like to put soy sauce or rice vinegar or even like a little touch of fish sauce, which a lot of people don't think of. And that gives like a great extra layer of umami onto it. But you want to sort of put those additional flavors into it. It doesn't have to be super strong. And it, again, like with the fish sauce, it doesn't even have to be something that a person could actually pick out in a crowd. It just gives it a little bit more depth. So some vinegar, some lemon, and then something to give it a little bit more depth. I think even if it's just like a very simple potato salad with like potatoes and maybe some extra veggies thrown in there and some mayo, you know, just put a little bit of things in there. The other thing is also just enough salt. Like, I think we all get afraid of salt. And it's amazing how much, like when people go to restaurants, like, wow, this food is so amazing. Like 90% of the time it's that they added butter and salt to it, right? So with a potato salad, you're putting mayo in there. You've got the fat piece, right? You've got that unctuousness. So make sure you're salting it properly because that can be the key.
Now, here's another one, and I kind of reverse here. Coleslaw. I've made a lot of coleslaw in my life. I've tried, you know, blue cheese and funky vegetables and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I always go back to cabbage, carrots, salt, pepper, sugar, mayonnaise. That's my favorite coleslaw. I don't know. Is it sometimes not worth tampering with the classics?
Completely. And I think that's one of the best things about summer is that everything is fresh. Everything is bright. When you have a potluck, especially if it's outside, like you kind of don't want things to be weighed down. So if you're buying good ingredients, then those should speak for themselves. You know, again, like I think with a coleslaw, it's like just put half a lemon on it and you'll see the whole thing brighten up if you think like this is feeling a little boring. But yeah, I think there's a reason why classics are classics. You know, you don't have to always reinvent the wheel. You don't always have to come to the potluck and be like, you'll never guess my secret ingredient. Like most people just want it to taste good. You know, it doesn't need to be like a special secret ingredient.
I want to talk some more about logistics here. Like I've had situations, especially in my family, where everybody thinks, okay, I have to bring enough of my thing to completely feed everybody. Then everybody does that. God. You end up with like way, way too much food. And sometimes leftovers are fine. If it's an outdoor thing, well, it might be too gross by the end of it. I don't know. How do we make sure we end up with the right quantities of food?
Oh my God. Yeah. We've all ended up with those like sort of sad, like wilted vegetables because they sat in the sun for too long. Yeah. We all know that movie. Yeah. I mean, listen, I think part of it is saying like some people bring food and some people bring other things. Like, I think that it's very useful to assign people dry goods at a potluck because there are always going to be the people who don't want to cook. So if you say to someone like, "Hey, can you bring paper plates and napkins?" and somebody else is bringing drinks, then you end up with not as many dishes. Like, I think it's better to have a few really great dishes than to kind of force everyone into bringing food, you know, because not everyone has that skill set and not everyone wants to or has the time. And so you end up with like some really delicious homemade things, and then you end up with like the weird grocery store thing that was like the leftover thing that nobody else bought that just sits there the whole time and is like a waste of money and food. So I think it's okay to like not make everyone bring something, and then you usually end up with the right amount of food.
It's Food Friday. We're talking to cookbook author and food show host Allie Rosen. Her books include Bring It. That's a book about casual entertaining. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What's your go-to thing to bring to a gathering where you're expected to bring food? If you like to plan these things out, invite people, parcel out who does what, love to know your strategies. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. We're picking up our talk with Allie Rosen, host of the food show Potluck and author of the cookbook Bring It, Tried and True Recipes for Potlucks and Casual Entertaining. She's with us on Food Friday talking about bringing a dish to pass and cooking when you're sharing with friends, family, maybe coworkers. Join in at 800-642-1234. What do you like to bring when you need a dish to pass? What are you always happy when Aunt whoever brings it to the family gathering, or do you have to pretend to like it? I don't know. Join in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's bring on a caller now. Karen is with us in Monona. Karen, hi.
Hi. When I make potato salad, sometimes I use blue cheese dressing. When I do that, the potato salad disappears almost immediately. It's just one of those things that I don't even always think of myself.
Karen, thanks a lot for that. I did something just like that. I made a pasta salad. A few bands were getting together to play for each other and have brats. I brought a pasta salad, threw in some blue cheese dressing, and yeah, it disappeared. Allie, blue cheese can do a lot.
I mean, I'm a huge fan of blue cheese, and blue cheese dressing is kind of like the easiest conduit to getting to blue cheese. It's like that unctuousness that you can add to something. Like, potatoes are delicious, but if you add something really like briny and unctuous to it, and then also the creaminess of it, like, I mean, what's not to like?
Karen, thanks a lot for that suggestion at 800-642-1234. Allie, let's talk about, you know, a finger food type of setup. We want to bring hors d'oeuvres or appetizers or that sort of thing. What kind of things do you like to make in that category?
Yeah, and I think sometimes the best kind of parties are the ones where you don't need a fork, you know, where you can like walk around with a drink in one hand and a plate in the other and not have to worry about like, how am I gonna cut this thing or move it? So, I mean, first of all, I think like little sandwiches, like little tea sandwiches are always great, you know, and tartines. Like, I am just a big fan of like putting things between or on a piece of bread and letting people pick it up and eat it because you can really go endless with the flavors of that. I also think it's kind of nice, like the classics, like a deviled egg or like, you know, putting like endive leaves are also a great conduit. I mean, one of my favorite things, speaking of blue cheese, now that you've got me thinking about blue cheese things, is to like take an endive leaf, put some blue cheese and pears in it, and that's it. And that's just like a great, refreshing, delicious little handheld thing. So, yeah, I mean, I think that if you can get away with it, finding like the easiest way for people to eat is always great.
All right, we've got a couple Central Time team votes for deviled eggs. Now, I gotta say, Allie, I love deviled eggs. In my head, they're complicated to make, and I know they're not really. Talk us through what goes into making deviled eggs.
Yeah, well, first of all, you know, you can now buy, like, at, you know, Costco, they have those, like, pre-made, already shelled boiled eggs. So, first of all, if you have no time but you love deviled eggs, like, there is no shame in buying them sort of halfway done, right? Start with that. But second of all, if you're going to make them from scratch, it's really easy. You just hard boil an egg. I think, 8 or 9 minutes is pretty good because you do want the center to be hard boiled, but not so overboiled that it gets kind of chalky. Like you want it to still have a little bit of bright yellow in it. And then you just add some mayo. My secret ingredient, which I mean, I don't think is so secret. A lot of people do it, but is pickle relish.
Ooh, yeah.
Because I think it kind of gives you that like tang. It gives you a little bit of crunch. And again, like you want something that'll add a little bit of bite to it, but that doesn't take a lot of your time. Like you're not there chopping up pickles, you know? So the pickle relish is great for that. And then just a little salt and that's kind of it. You know, people love having deviled eggs with all different things on it. So again, like we're on a blue cheese kick, like put some blue cheese in there, you know, put shrimp in there. I love shrimp in my deviled eggs. Mm-hmm. Do it with beets and make it pink. I mean, they're so fun to do. And so I think a lot of people really get hung up on the hard-boiled egg piece of it. And that's something you can do in advance. You can buy them pre-boiled. And then from there, it only takes a few minutes. So, you know, some mayo and some egg yolk, and you're kind of golden.
Food Friday, talking to Allie Rosen, author of the cookbook Bring It, tried and true recipes for potlucks and casual entertaining, getting great advice on dishes to bring to potlucks, picnics, cookouts, you name it. Let's go back to your calls at 800-642-1234. Jim is with us in Marinette. Jim, hi.
Hey, how you going, guys?
Good. What'd you want to tell us about?
My sister-in-law, at every family gathering, family get-together, she makes these things that are called taco roll-ups. She uses tortilla shells. They're like the little pinwheels, but you got like sour cream and taco seasoning. You put like lettuce and tomato and anything like you can find in a taco, but always the first thing to go at a family gathering.
And just use the toothpick trick, you know, you kind of dice them and then toothpick them together.
And I guess depending how ambitious she feels on putting them together.
Yeah. Now, Jim, is this something you only ever eat at those family gatherings that your sister-in-law brings them to, or have you tried this at home yourself?
I've tried it my home myself, but I've never made it as good as she has.
That's
and they're usually the first thing to go to.
Jim, thanks a lot. That is, I think it's kind of a classic, Allie, that roll up, whether you got the toothpick in there or not. Any twists you want to throw it at Jim and the rest of us?
Well, first of all, I have to say I'm so glad that Jim was telling us something positive that his sister-in-law did.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like that could have gone in either direction,
totally.
You know? Well, my sister-in-law. but no, I think that's also, you know, we've all had that. But I think that what's great about that is, again, you know, the taco roll-ups are sort of flavor conduits, which I think when we think of toast, when we think of deviled eggs, when we think of, you know, tortilla roll-up kind of things, like you can make the same thing, but with a lot of different flavors. So you can do some with taco seasoning. You can do some with guacamole. You can do some with feta and tomatoes and, you know, olives and make it kind of a Greek tortilla roll-up. You know, it's giving you that base layer to add flavor into, which I think always makes a potluck feel a little bit more exciting because you're having different options for people without replicating the work on multiple dishes.
Jim, thanks a lot for sharing that favorite with us. Now, Allie, I want to go back to something you mentioned a few moments ago, the idea of, you know, putting out little sandwiches for our cookouts. I worry about that. Because I worry, you know, oh, depending on the ingredients, the bread's going to get soggy as it sits there and then it's going to get gross. And then nobody's going to want to eat it after a while. How do we avoid the issue of sogginess?
Well, I think you have to think, first of all, about what your potluck is in terms of weather, indoor, outdoor, how long it's going to go on. And you have to decide what you're making accordingly. You know, like a 2-hour lunchtime potluck inside in, you know, someone's air conditioned living room is a very different beast than an outdoor gathering. And I think sometimes people get so stuck on like, oh, I always bring the tortilla roll-ups, right? That they don't think about, well, maybe the tortilla roll-ups wouldn't work at this event. Now, tortilla roll-ups, one of the things that is great about them is that those tortillas really do sit well, but they get soggy eventually too. If you are doing something with bread, I actually think like, you know, a little tartine, which sounds fancy, but is really just a sandwich without a top, is great for that because those hold a lot better because you can get a sturdier bread. Like if you are on, you know, if you have a little sandwich, you have to get bread that isn't quite as rustic and, you know, solid because then it'll be sort of harder to bite into. But if you're doing something without a top, you can do like a really you know, rich sourdough, and that'll hold up a lot better. So yeah, like tea sandwiches using like Wonder Bread or a really like light, fluffy white bread are not going to hold up as well if they're sitting out in the heat, you know? But if you're sitting outside and it's not a hot day and you know it's going to be in the shade, then great, it'll hold up longer. But yeah, I mean, you have to acknowledge the context that you're in and not get so zoned in on this is the thing I was determined to make, because sometimes it doesn't work.
Now I got to ask the delicate emotional question, Allie. Now, this has probably never happened to you because you're a pro, but it's happened to all of us sometimes where you bring the thing and you watch and everybody gets their food and your thing, 90% of it is still there at the end of the night. How can we manage the emotional damage that causes us?
I would say the main thing to do is to always make stuff that you like, and then you will hope that no one eats it so you can take it home. You know, if it's something that you love, who cares? I mean, I think there's, you know, people have this like sense of pride around what they make and, oh my God, I wish everyone would eat it. But I think of it the other way. It's like, I do love it when people are happy with what I make, but I'm also kind of like, well, if they didn't want it, then can I have it back and enjoy taking it home? You know, which by the way, I think also is totally fine. Like, I think if there's a big potluck and you bring something and nobody eats it, you are totally allowed to bring it home. I mean, you know, offer to the host, say, hey, can I leave you some? But I don't think you have to pretend like they're going to have food left over too. So, you know, it's okay to make something and take it home, I think.
Awesome. Allie, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us again today.
Thank you so much for having me, and enjoy your summer potlucks.
That's Allie Rosen. Allie hosts a New York cooking show called Potluck, and she's the author of the cookbook Bring It, Tried and True Recipes for Potlucks and Casual Entertaining, along with a couple other food-related books. Got a novel coming out, I believe, about a food writer. That should be interesting. She was with us today to share recipes and tips for your next summer potluck when you need to bring that dish to pass. Still time for you to share your favorites recipe if you want to. Head over to the Ideas Network Facebook page. You can also let us know maybe about something you brought to pass that didn't work out so well. All that at the Ideas Network Facebook page. Coming up Monday on The Morning Show with Kate Archer-Kent, get the latest on broadband access in Wisconsin and lack of same in some parts of the state, plus some efforts to get more people connected to high-speed internet. That's coming up Monday morning at 7:30 here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. Coming up today at 6 on 1A+, it's the weekly news roundup. Record heat in a third of the country, record rain in the Northeast, and a drop in inflation numbers. Those stories and more today at 6 on 1A+. Now, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration says last month was the hottest month for the planet on record. Southwestern cities are currently breaking records as a heat wave sweeps the country. In Wisconsin, the U.S. Drought Monitor lists all of southern Wisconsin under a severe or extreme drought as of the latest data on Tuesday. Scientific American reports that extreme heat is the top cause for weather-related deaths in America, killing more people than hurricanes, floods, and tornadoes combined. Milwaukee-based extreme heat specialist is here to talk about heat wave preparation and how to stay safe when the hot weather comes to Wisconsin, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about protecting yourself from extreme heat? How do you stay cool during the summer months? Does your community have resources to reach out and help people when a heat wave comes through town? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. Nick Tomorrow is the Emergency Preparedness and Environmental Health Director for the Milwaukee Health Department. Nick, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon.
Now, I think we don't always take heat waves seriously as a health threat. Can you talk about how potentially serious they can be?
Yeah, absolutely. And I like in your intro, well, certainly not a good fact, but heat-related death is the number one cause of weather-related death. And as you said, I think we're headed into the middle of summer here. We really have not had extreme heat yet, so sometimes people get a little bit complacent. So I always appreciate the opportunity to talk about this subject and just remind people that it can really sneak up on you at different times. And we really need to be conscious of heat-related illness for ourselves. And then we as a local health department always focus on the most vulnerable in the community in these types of events.
I wanted to look back. We had the big 1995 heat wave. A lot of people think of Chicago, understandably, but it also affected Milwaukee and other parts of southern Wisconsin. 1999 heat wave. What kind of lessons, from a community health standpoint now, what kind of lessons have we learned that a community like Milwaukee can do to help prevent the worst from happening?
Yeah, you bring up 1995. We work closely with Tim Halbach with the National Weather Service. He speaks to our groups that we work with quite frequently, and we did in that 1995 heat wave had 91 direct heat-related deaths. So really big event. One of the things Tim always stresses is that because these heat-related events are so far apart, we do sometimes become complacent. So we really, again, stress the importance of preparedness for these events and then really response during. We organize around the community with a lot of different community partners to both talk with them about their preparedness for the community and their messaging to individuals they work with directly, and then also, you know, response activities they would take in an event like this. So if we have a heat emergency, we're actually working with Milwaukee County Office of Emergency Management and other partners to have coordination calls with a number of community partners, governmental agencies, to really look at what are our resources, what are our needs, who are the most vulnerable, where are they in our community, and how do we reach them most effectively, both communication-wise, with resources, do we need to open up, you know, special cooling centers, things like that. So a lot of coordination goes around, especially events like 1995 that would be elevated to a heat emergency.
You mentioned vulnerable populations. Who are we most worried about in the event of heat waves?
Yeah, so we really stress the elderly. So those who are our friends, our loved ones, our acquaintances who are older, infants, young children. We think a lot about people with underlying conditions, both heart and lung conditions, but other chronic conditions as well. Think about those with access and functional needs or certain types of disabilities. Those there's a good percentage of people who have work in outdoor settings that we really have to be conscious of and modify work schedules or modify work at different times. If you live in an area or a home without air conditioning. And then also, you know, we stress as a health department looking at what types of medications are you on and what how those types of interactions can occur in extreme heat events. So really just exceptionally important to think about those in your life, whether it's, you know, those who are part of your family, friends, or just neighbors, anyone you can think of during these types of times that really could use a helping hand and checking on them frequently in especially these really extreme events.
Talking to Nick tomorrow, Emergency Preparedness and Environmental Health Director for the Milwaukee Health Department. We're looking at heat wave preparation. Now, it's warm in Wisconsin today. We're not at a heat wave right now, but we're watching a lot of the country deal with extreme heat. We're talking about what we need to know, what individuals and what communities can do to prepare in the event of a heat wave. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions for our guests, things that you see in your own community, things you worry about. And if you have people in that basically third of the country dealing with this right now, what are you hearing from them? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Nick, what kind of temperatures and heat indexes do you, as an emergency preparedness coordinator, what are the levels where you start to get worried?
We coordinate very closely with the National Weather Service. So we have three different categories. We start with a heat health update that we would be putting out messaging. That is a heat index value. So when you talk about heat index, the heat index is a combination of looking at both the air temperature, but also humidity. So really it's kind of how hot does it really feel outside? So the heat index in a heat health update is when it's expected to be a heat index of 95 or higher during daytime hours in the next 1 to 7 days would activate that first kind of the lowest level of our thresholds. Heat health advisory, we would issue this typically anywhere from 6 to up to 36 hours prior to an advisory expected. That would be a heat index value expected to be 100 or higher, or daytime heat index values expected to be 95 to 99 for 4 consecutive days. Really important to think about the fact that sometimes we just have heat indices and temperatures that are extending for several days, and that really begins to kind of fatigue individuals and the community in general. And then what we're most focused on and within this discussion, what we want to stress most, and especially when we're talking about those who are most vulnerable, is that heat emergency, true heat emergency, and that would be a heat health watch or a warning. That we would try to get out messaging, obviously, as early as possible for anticipation, typically 24 to 48 hours at least, working with the National Weather Service. That heat warning really is looking at expected heat index values that are equal to or exceeding 105, and then nighttime heat index values that are 75 or higher for at least a 48-hour period. Also, and there's a lot of numbers, I know, but just, you know, you're sure. Talking about high heat index. So heat index values of 100 to 104 for 4 or more consecutive days. So again, if you think about it, if you just cannot get out of the heat, especially if you don't have air conditioning at home, and even in the nighttime, that heat index and temperatures are not falling below a certain level, it's just so fatiguing to people, and especially those with chronic conditions and those who are going to be most susceptible to these environmental conditions.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Elizabeth is with us in Verona. Elizabeth, hi.
Hi, I just wanted to comment that I have family in Farmington, New Mexico, which is up in the Four Corners region of New Mexico. They have feels like temperatures of, or air temperatures of over 100 degrees or right around 100, but not everyone realizes that that's abnormal for that area. It is a high desert area at the base of the Rocky Mountains, and it's just, it's weird to have that much heat and not the huge temperature swings at night to cool off. It just keeps getting hotter.
How are they doing out there, Elizabeth?
They're luckily it's an area that does get hot, so they do have air conditioners. I'm lucky to have my mom actually visiting me in Wisconsin right now. She has MS and she doesn't do well with the heat. So it's just, it is what it is, but you stay inside and you drink lots of water and just try and stay healthy.
Elizabeth, thanks a lot for the call. Now, Nick, you mentioned something. Elizabeth mentioned something that reminded me. Our colleagues here at WPR reported those nighttime temperatures here in Wisconsin in the summer, on average, they're going up in most places in the state. That might not be an eye-popping number as the daytime high might be, but that can be a really big problem, right?
Yeah, again, you know, just think about those heat events, and if you cannot cool off, even at night, that's when we're going to have a lot more problems in individuals or the general population. And that's what we're seeing. I mean, again, yeah, thank the caller for the information. I pulled up what's called a heat and health tracker on the CDC website, Climate and Health Program, really impressive in terms of what's going on around the country. I think individuals on the call have probably heard, you know, Texas, Florida, New Mexico, Arizona, really just extended periods of high heat. And it's been a pretty unprecedented summer so far. I think you mentioned maybe at the outset that 3 of the highest, the hottest days on record in the history of tracking earlier in the month here. So,
thanks again for that call. We're talking to Nick Tomorrow, Emergency Preparedness and Environmental Health Director for the Milwaukee Health Department, talking about the dangers of extreme heat and how to protect our health and how communities can prepare. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have people you check in on in times of bad weather, including heat waves? What do you do to make sure they're doing okay? What kind of efforts do you see in your community to prepare for extreme temperatures like this? Do you happen to be listening online from one of those parts of the country that's getting that incredible heat right now? Knock on wood, we're not getting into Wisconsin yet. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Nick Tomorrow, Emergency Preparedness and Environmental Health Director for Milwaukee Health, and we're finding out how to protect ourselves and our communities from extreme heat waves like we're seeing across so much of the southern United States right now, and what local governments can do to prepare. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions, maybe your experiences with a heat wave, maybe right now if you happen to be listening in one of those parts of the country. Join in at 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Back to your calls. Samantha is with us in Menominee. Samantha, hi.
Hi there.
What did you want to ask about, Samantha?
I was just hoping that your guest could explain to listeners the difference between a heat index and a wet bulb temperature. I know that that's been that phrase has been popping up in the news more and more as information about climate change begins to surface more, and I think will be continue to be more and more relevant to folks going forward. I'll take the answer off the air. Thank you.
Samantha, great question, and I will admit I get confused about this. Nick, can you help straighten us out?
Yeah, I'll do my best, and, you know, kind of wish my friend Tim was on here to help me out. But wet bulb temperature is defined as the lowest temperature that can be reached under current ambient conditions by the evaporation of water only. That's not going to help our listeners right now. So I am not an expert on wet bulb temperature. I will be very upfront with that that statement. So as I'm on with you here, I will read more and I'll explain this better to you.
So I think we're overdue for a conversation with Tim Halbach, actually. It's been a while, so we should bring him back on to talk about the nuts and bolts of weather. Thanks for the suggestion, actually. That could make a great future topic. And thanks for calling in at 800-642-1234. Nick, as we reach out to people in the event of a heat wave, for individual people now, like, what are some of the warning signs that, heat is getting to you, you need to stop what you're doing and take care of yourself?
Yeah, I appreciate that question. You know, really important. So think about first, you know, I'll first talk about heat exhaustion. So if you are experiencing, or certainly if you're with someone, heavy sweating, if you're looking at someone, they look pale, you know, if you're experiencing or someone's describing muscle cramping, tiredness, obviously weakness, somebody's looking dizzy, feeling dizzy, headache, you know, just signs of nauseousness and vomiting also can take place during heat exhaustion, up to and including fainting. Heat stroke, really, when we're reaching this much more emergent stage in the body where core body temperature is rising to a very dangerous level, you can actually start to get to the point where you're not sweating. That's a huge red flag and something that as an individual or you if you're with somebody to really take note of and seek immediate emergency help, rapid pulse, you know, likely have a oftentimes a throbbing headache, dizziness, nausea, confusion, leading to unconsciousness. This is really a state where the body is at such extreme core temperatures that you can end up really risking organ failure and multi-system organ failure. So this is a situation where, you know, we end up with individuals in the hospital and sometimes hospitalized for good amounts of time.
And Nick, as I understand it, there's a concern that we may undercount the impact of heat waves sometimes because there might be an increase in some causes of death, not direct heat stroke, but people who are vulnerable to bad conditions, people with cardiovascular problems, things like that. Who should be particularly watchful about hot weather when it comes to people with, you know, existing health conditions?
Yeah, you named, I mean, those with underlying heart conditions and respiratory conditions are probably top of the list. But really, you know, one of the callers earlier, those with MS, those with chronic conditions of many sorts, diabetes, we track, especially during heat emergencies, we track certain codes within hospital systems for those who may have really been hospitalized or severely affected through heat exposure. But, you know, the best thing we can say in a venue like this where we're able to talk to a lot of people is just really thinking about your underlying health conditions and anything that's, you know, significant where you're on medications, certain types of cardiac medications for mental health. There's many, many different things that you really want to take note of. Those who are on medications for blood pressure, incredibly important to think about, you know, your exposure in these heat events.
Talking to Nick tomorrow, Environmental Health Director and Emergency Preparedness Director for the Milwaukee Health Department, talking about how we get ready for heat waves, what to do when they come along to keep everybody safe. Still time for you to join in at 800-642-1234. Nick, for outdoor activities, you know, employers who have people working outside or sports coaches who have a bunch of, say, high school kids playing outside, when do you reach out to them and say, you know, maybe take some steps to lower that risk?
Yeah, again, I think one of the most important things we do is that we're putting out public messaging. And obviously the National Weather Service is just, you know, a champion at this in terms of the situational reports they put out and help to get out the message. But from a public health standpoint and a health agency standpoint, we would be trying to really, within all means of communication that are feasible, put out information for organizations like that to make decisions. We did have a number of you know, slightly different, but during the air quality problems recently that really reached a higher level than we've had in recent history here, we had a lot of consults on what would be, you know, reasonable to be doing outside. And the that's a common scenario in the heat events as well, where we would have outreach regarding whether it's reasonable to have sporting events and things of the sort.
Now, for longer term things with climate change, with periodic El Nino conditions like we have now, are there things you see Milwaukee doing to, I don't know, change the landscape in the city for the future to try to lower the risk of future heat waves?
You know, I think a lot of people on the call have probably heard. I mean, green infrastructure is incredibly important. Environmental Collaboration Office, ECO, at the city is a really important division or department in the city that is promoting green infrastructure. So tree canopy is huge. Really trying to reduce that heat island effect, which occurs most, you know, significantly in a downtown area. So the more concrete you have, the more heat you are going to retain. So, you know, there are a lot of efforts both in Milwaukee and other parts of the country to really look at that, what we call green infrastructure and the built environment to really help, especially long term. Can't stress enough the importance of tree canopy. There was Dan Buckler did a great job organizing with NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, last year, a heat mapping event throughout our community. And so we had that data to look at. We also, as an organization, have a colleague here who updated what's called a heat vulnerability index. So it looks at a lot of information and maps out based on population data, natural and built environment data, sociodemographic information. What are the parts of our city and county that are the most susceptible to extreme heat? And that is, as a public health agency and other agencies that work in the space to try to help protect people, it's incredibly valuable to be able to target our efforts.
Just a quick question, Nick. You mentioned the air quality. I'm looking at the wildfire smoke map. It's slowly making its way across Wisconsin again. I just wonder, you know, you're a health guy in Milwaukee. Did you ever think you'd have to be dealing with a public health issue of wildfire smoke?
You know, it's a great question. I was out west one time and you know, close to wildfires, really impressive what we were seeing. This this was really unprecedented. And when I was actually doing a different, you know, media piece on the air quality at the time, and the reporter asked me, and I didn't know at the time, but I don't think we had reached, you know, levels any time, you know, in the history of our area. To close to what we had. It was a day, I remember it was the Tuesday of that week. I went outside and you could literally smell the smoke. It was, and myself, who have no underlying respiratory issues, I was really, really affected out there. So it was pretty impressive.
Nick, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
All right. Thanks for the time. Thanks for getting word out.
That's Nick Tomorrow, Emergency Preparedness and Environmental Health Director for the Milwaukee Health Department. Nick joined us to talk about extreme heat and how to stay safe in the summer months when extreme heat comes along. Coming up Monday here on Central Time, hazing hits the Big Ten as Northwestern's football coach is fired after reports of problems on the team. We'll look at the hazards of hazing at all levels and efforts to prevent it from happening in the first place. And a long-running game show has made a cultural tradition out of grocery store prices and guessing what things cost. we'll meet the author of the new book, Solving the Price is Right. And you can join in with your Price is Right memories and questions. That and more. It's all coming up Monday here on Central Time on the Ideas Network.